Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th day of September, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. First, though, happy birthday, Steve Ray. It's coming up
tomorrow.
Today's today's the 18th. Tomorrow. Happy birthday. And you, as you can see this week, Dave Enright, one step ahead of the law. We've upgraded to Michael Oden. Speaking of upgrades. Yes, I know it sounds like last week's news and the weeks before and the weeks before that. But just about everybody put out big updates this week, and they're all for security flaws, and many of those flaws are being actively exploited. On Monday, Apple updated just about everything. iOS 14, iPadOS 14, macOS Big Sur, and watchOS all got security updates. And yes, that was just one day before their big reveal of new hardware and software, so you know it was important.
It was a zero-day Pegasus exploit.
Right. Yeah. Apple says all updates are because maliciously crafted content, PDFs, web content, whatever, could be used in arbitrary code execution. Apple also says these updates fix an issue that allowed attackers to bypass Apple protections intended to stop code execution via messages. The new updates are labeled iOS 14.8, iPadOS 14.8, watchOS 7.6.2, and macOS Big Sur 11.6. If you're not already updated, do it today. This should kill once and for all the idea that Macs don't get viruses and problems. Google released security updates for the Chrome web browser to address a total of 11 security issues, two of which it says are actively exploited 0 days in the wild. These updates are for Windows, the Mac, and Linux. Adobe released security updates for Reader, Acrobat. You know what? There's a ton of their programs they released updates for. It's simpler to say if you own any Adobe product, update it. And, of course, we had another patch Tuesday. Microsoft plugged dozens of security holes in Windows and related products, including a vulnerability that, yes, is already being exploited in active attacks. Look, by this point, we shouldn't have to say it, but we will. Again, before you do any updates, make absolutely sure you have at least two good backups of your data. Make sure at least one of them is off your computer. Be patient with the updates. Give yourself plenty of time, but don't put it off. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is update everything. You can find it at the upper left corner of our website at soundbites.org. Your choices are, I've updated everything, I'm updating everything, I'm too lazy, going commando, baby, is my TRS DOS still safe, and other. So far, we've got 27 votes. I've updated everything is well over half. So that's very good. And of course, if you said other, or if you just have more to say, and believe me, I know you will, head on over to our website at soundbites.org. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 18-SEPT-21. Update everything.
Yeah, most of the blog postings we saw about this are stop reading this and update now.
Yeah, exactly. It's you could not update too soon.
Yeah.
For this one. These are actively exploited.
State-sponsored, written by an Israeli company. The Israelis have some really good programmers.
Yeah, they really are. The latest statistic is that a machine gets hacked every 18 seconds. I think it's up to 36 seconds now. Because there are so many more devices. devices, I guess.
Takes longer.
A machine gets hacked every 36 seconds. Every American will be hacked at least, an attempt will be made on them at least 3 times every year. And if you're not updated.
That sounds low.
Yeah, it does. But that statistic came out of the Clark School at the University of Maryland. Actually, 2 years ago, so it might be much. That's the latest study that was completed, so it might be much later, much bigger now. But the point is, you're not safe.
And
you're not safe. It's that simple.
Explain to people how they get hacked. It's not some seedy guy, in a dark hallway typing away on his computer.
Right.
It's filling out Facebook polls.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, what's your mother's maiden name? You know, how far do you live now from where you grew up? Well, no, I know what city you grew up in, and you're answering security questions on all of those polls that people then conglomerate together and break into your accounts.
Right,
and almost easier. I was just listening to your podcast
hold
about
on
this.
A second.
Yeah,
give us a call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Say almost easier is you get a phone call. Hi, this is Joe from tech support. We're having a trouble with your account. What's the password? 99 times out of 100, they'll give them the password.
They'll give them the password. It's exactly right. Look, we've said it before. People, it's nice to be nice. People mm-hmm. want to be nice.
We're programmed to be nice, sort
of. We're programmed to be nice. So when somebody calls up and said, I need help, you tend to give it to them.
Yep.
But you shouldn't. I'm sorry, particularly when it comes to people's passwords, your own or anybody's. You really shouldn't do that. And you really need to pay attention to what sort of information you're giving out. I know you really need to know what kind of elf you are. I do understand the depth of your need for that. But the reality is, in order to find out what kind of elf you are, you have to give them your security information. And if they get enough of those questions answered, they can break into your accounts. People say all the time, oh, I don't know. Somebody got my account. They changed my password. How did they get it? Because you told them your information.
I read a great story about two people were chatting and a little kid runs up and, hey, mom, I'm doing a genealogy product for program for school. What's your mother's maiden name? And comes back a little bit later. What's the street you grew up on? Comes back a little later. What's the first car you owned?
Yeah.
isn't that sweet doing his schoolwork? And the person she's with saying, no, he just got your security questions and who knows what he's buying on your account.
That's exactly right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Hi, Gary. What's up?
Hi. Happy belated anniversary.
Thank you.
Your show is part of the reason why I'm a member.
Thank you. That's what we love to hear. Thank you very much.
I'm hoping you can help me with something that's it's not a major problem. It's an annoyance in Gmail. One time I accidentally mistyped an email address. And, of course, I got back a message saying undeliverable. But now every time I try to type in the correct email address, Gmail gives me suggestions. And one of the suggestions is the incorrect email address. Now, I went to the Gmail forums, and they said, when it pops up, just right-click on the suggestion that you want to get rid of and then delete it. Well, the pop-ups, when you right-click on that suggestion, don't even offer delete. Any suggestions?
It depends on what is remembering the wrong address. If it's Google's autocomplete list or if it's your browser's autocomplete list. So you have to delete both of those.
Okay. Because I use Chrome and I'm Gmail. So, all right. Where would I find it in Chrome?
Yeah, we're looking now.
Open up Chrome. At the top, you can find those three dots, top right. That's the three dots.
Yep.
Under more tools, One of your choices will be clear browsing data. You can choose a time range if you want to, like all time or whatever, whatever. But if you click advanced, one of your choices would be, well, passwords and other sign-in data, cookies, cached images, browsing history, download history, etc. So
there should be one in there that says autofill, isn't there?
There certainly used to be, but I don't see it this time. Of course, I'm on.
There used to be on Chrome. There used to be a Google thing where they would save the information to the web browser.
Yep.
You could go in there and change it. I had to do that for my address because I moved.
Right.
I had to take the old address out and put the new address in.
Here. This might help. If you go to, interesting. If you go, again, those three dots in the upper right corner and then hit settings. And under settings, select autofill. Type autofill in the search box, rather.
Okay.
You'll see all of your saved stuff, and you should be able to scroll down through at least some of that. And one of the choices, you should be able to see at least some of that. I don't know where you would particularly find that under. It would be under whatever you're signing into. mail@google.com or whatever, but you would find those, and then you can delete the one you don't want.
Okay.
If it's all being saved by Chrome.
Right.
All right.
And then the other place that it could be is in Gmail under contacts, under other contacts.
Okay. Because I even went so, I'll look there, because I even went so far as to wipe out the contacts. And put it back in with the correct email address and all that. But, right. Okay, other contacts.
Right, not your main contact list. There's an other contact. So the contact list is ones you have intentionally saved as a contact. And the other is Gmail. In fact, most email programs do this, trying to be nice and remembering anyone you've ever emailed so that their address is already there for you. And if you type it wrong, it remembers it wrong.
Right. Correct, I mean.
Yeah.
Okay. I will look in those places and see if I can wipe it out.
Perfect.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Have fun.
All right.
In the Apple Mail app, it's called the previous recipient list. So it's not even in contacts. It's previous recipients.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
All right, so there you are. And again, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. That's one of the problems we now have is that every program tries to be helpful.
Yeah.
And so you can wipe something out of one place and it's still in another place.
Yeah. It's only as helpful as you are to it.
And right.
You put in the wrong thing, it's going to spit the wrong thing back out at you.
Right, and it's only partially helpful. It'll remember all that stuff, but it doesn't make it easy to delete it if it's wrong.
And there is a way to turn off auto-remember contacts in the Google settings, and I'll post a link for that as well.
Right.
But it's handy to have those sometimes,
yes.
Unless you typed it wrong.
Right. There's a lot of power in our systems these days, but sometimes they don't get it right. And that's one of the things that all the new systems are playing with AI are trying to do is say, oh, you never use this address. Maybe we should stop suggesting it or whatever. But it would be very easy. It would be very helpful to us if, for example, when you do start to type an address and one of them comes up wrong in the list, if you could right-click on that address and just say delete it.
Yeah.
That would be really helpful as opposed to only partially helpful. But I understand why those things are tough. And then you get into the, well, you deleted it. Do you really mean it? Are you sure? Do you want to undo that deletion? Yep. You know, you have to go through 15 things before you can get anything done.
What happened to the files I was saving in the trash?
Okay, here's a tip. Tip of the day. Do not save files in the trash bin. Files in the trash bin are, wait for it, trash.
Although sometimes you have to remember to empty the trash.
Right.
We had a customer come in the other day and his hard drive was full. And there was also confusion between the system trash, where you delete your files, and the trash in his photos library. Actually, I think it was using Aperture. He had 64,000 photos in the Aperture trash.
Holy moly!
Because he never knew you had to empty it.
Right.
So for the last 10 years, he's been trashing things and never knew he had to. So we hit empty trash. 3 days later, it finished.
But he had a whole hard drive back.
Yeah, about half his hard drive was free now.
Yeah. Well, the other problem, of course, is that with the trash in most systems, they are marked for deletion. And so if you do save something in the trash, save it in the trash, the operating system may indeed delete it.
Yeah.
When it starts to run out of room, it will automatically remove stuff in the trash. So if you're saving things in the trash, they may not really be there anymore. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Fred. What's up?
Hey, first of all, happy birthday, Steve.
Thank you.
Yep.
And I just heard that last comment. I'm going, that seems like an awfully dumb idea. I'm sorry. But saving it in trash, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I have a folder called Almost Trash.
Almost. Well,
I'm well, pretty sure I want to trash that, but I'm not quite sure yet.
And that's fair. That's not something that's going to be auto-deleted. You know it's there, and you deal with it.
I do have one that's sort for later, and it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
I've got some questions about using a phone and kind of using the same system with a computer. I'm looking at a Samsung Galaxy phone, and I want to do my email and do all that stuff, and I want to use NPass for all my passwords. I'm going to try to get more modern.
Sure, good for you.
NPass works with the cell phone.
Yes. Yes, I have an Android phone, which is what a Samsung Galaxy will be, and I have NPass on it, and once I signed in with the same username and password I used on my desktop and my tablet and my Chromebook, it uses the same file. I originally set up NPass so that it saved my encrypted file on Google Docs and Google Drive. You can use Dropbox. You can use Apple's Drive. You can use Microsoft's Drive. You can use Amazon's Drive. But you save it there, and you tell your program that's where it is. So then when you put that program and sign in with any other device, it'll say, oh, he's using the one that's stored on, for example, Amazon's storage. And it'll
I save the NPass program on my drive?
You store the data file. The program is on your phone and on your desktop. But they are both looking at the same data file, which is saved, in my case, in Google Drive.
And that lets you access those same passwords on your phone and your computer and not have to keep two separate password databases.
Right.
Okay. Now the challenge I have is using various desktops. Say at work, I go to a different location, working with somebody, and I want to open up something, and they don't have NPass.
Right.
How would you recommend navigating that challenge?
Why would you want to log into one of your accounts on someone else's computer?
Yeah.
Just out of convenience, because that's where I am, and I might be working over in this other area today.
Okay, so
I want to look at something.
Two things. first, whenever you do something like that, be very, very certain that that other machine is not saving your password.
You can use a private browser window if you're on in a web browser, and that will help. The irony is private browsing protects you from other people on that same computer. It doesn't stop anyone on the internet from watching it.
Right, right. But so my suggestion there would be to check that thing on your phone where you do have NPass.
Right.
That way you don't give anybody else access to any of your information ever, which is the point behind passwords.
Right, right.
And it's convenient because NPass is right there.
Okay.
That now, would be my suggestion.
One area that I work, my work would require our IT persons to load NPass because they do everything through an administrator.
Right. If it's not on your private phone,
yeah, that's why it's best to put it on your own phone and not on anyone else's computer.
Okay.
Right. That makes sense.
And then I have another question about my drive. I've got some stuff that's been there for forever, and it's not actually even mine. My son-in-law was storing some pictures and files and stuff and didn't have access to it. And I said, well, let me just put it over here. And now I don't need it. I want to get rid of it, but I want to make sure it goes to another system. How can I send that a file that's in my drive to another user, another Google account, and then delete it from mine? I want to make sure that they get what's...
You're talking about Google's drive.
Yeah, Google's
okay.
My drive.
Two ways to do that. One is to share the file with that other account.
Uh-huh.
And then log on with that other account and copy the file to your machine.
Or to their machine.
Machine. And then you can delete it from yours. They can then upload it to my drive as well. You can send it to them download it as a file and send it to them.
Copy it onto a flash drive, for example.
Or just email it to them.
Depends on how big the files are, if they'll fit through email.
Which is why sharing it with them is a better option.
And how many there are.
Right.
You know, if you're talking about gigabytes, then it might be easier to put it on a hard drive and hand them that drive.
Right.
Okay. Now, once I share it, they have to do something with it before I delete it, correct?
Yes, they would have to copy it they would have to copy it, say, to their hard drive or to another place on their Google Drive before you delete it. Because as it stands, they would really only have a pointer to your copy of the file.
Gotcha. And the other thing you mentioned, saving it to a flash drive, that brings me to a question of I have pretty good luck taking stuff that I'm working on and putting it in my drive, but taking it out and putting on another hard drive, I'm not having good luck with that. It doesn't want to go that way.
You should just be able to drag it from one window to the other. So open the My Drive window in one window and open the flash drive in a different window and drag the files you want from one window to the other window.
The other way you can do it is on when you open a document, under File, one of your choices is Download.
Okay.
Under Download, you have the choice of Word document, Open Document Format, which is used by LibreOffice, rich text, PDF.
Yeah, it depends on what you want to do with it once you get it downloaded.
Right. So let's say you wanted to share a document with somebody else and they use Microsoft Office. You can download your document as a Microsoft Word or Excel or PowerPoint and just send it to them.
And if it's a document that's going to be opened in somebody else's My Drive?
Then you can just share the document with them.
Okay, on a Chromebook?
Yeah.
If I want to put it on a flash drive and take it to somebody, put it on with a Chromebook.
Someone with a Chromebook, it's easier to share it with them in Google Drive.
Okay.
In Google Drive, when you open a document, in the upper right, you'll see a blue button that says share. And you can then type the email address of the person with whom you want to share that file, and then they can also open it. What's really cool about Google Drive is that you can also, both of you can edit that file simultaneously.
Okay.
In fact, 10 people can edit that. 20, 50 people can edit. That gets a little messy.
It can get confusing, yes.
But you can do that. Everybody who shares it can, if you let them, when you go to share a file with somebody, one of the things that you have to choose is what type of access they get. Your choices are editor, which means, shockingly, they can edit the document. Commenter, which means they can read it and then add comments for the real editor. Or just viewer, which means they can look at it and that's all. You can also make them the owner.
Yeah, if you're intending to give them the file permanently,
make them the owner,
yeah.
Then I can delete it from my drive?
I would.
After they copy it into their drive.
Right, because remember, you're only giving them a pointer at that point.
Okay. And I do the same with pictures?
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
How about if you want to do everything from one Google account to another Google account, there's the download everything. What do they call that now? Google download everything.
Yeah.
Takeout. That downloads everything from your Google account, and then you can give that on a flash drive to someone else, and they would then have access to all those files.
Right.
But that does do everything.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's.
More than you need.
That might be an easier way, because there's probably very little that I don't want them to have, or if anything. I mean, that's just
right. Am I hearing the music? Is that what I'm doing? Okay, listen, we got it. Yeah. I'm sorry, we got to take a break.
Okay. You guys.
Thanks. No, we got to go. All right. Sorry, I did not hear the music. It was way too low. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 36 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
What? Who are you?
I'm Steve Ray now.
Okay, now you're Steve Ray. And at 42 minutes after the hour, I was in such a hurry at the end of the last thing. At 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Ed from Ithaca, New York on the line. What's up, Ed?
Hi, guys. I recently acquired a MacBook Air. It's 2014, running Mojave. I wanted to see if there's any kind of app that will consolidate podcasts, pull them down and download them automatically. I don't know what they're called.
There are a bunch of them, and there's one built into the Mac called iTunes. It does music and it's one of the problems with iTunes. It does too much. So in Mojave, it does music and movies and TV shows and podcasts. So in iTunes, on the left sidebar, you tell it what type of media that you're looking for. And it will go to the podcast directory and allow you to subscribe to podcasts and automatically download them. There are several, and Apple has split all those features out into separate apps in Catalina and later. So there's a separate music app, a separate podcast app, a separate TV app. So it makes it a little easier to manage everything. In the early days, 20 years ago, iTunes did your music. Right. And then they added iPod syncing, and then they started doing TV shows, and then they started doing movies, and just everything got thrown into iTunes, and it does so much. There's a couple of third-party ones. Pocket Cast, Overcast is pretty good. You can go into the App Store or even Google, and then you can search for Podcatcher or Podcast App. That's sort of the key key phrase to search for.
Okay, it's Podcatcher or what was the other one?
Podcast App.
Podcast App.
But a lot of people just start with iTunes. I use iTunes myself. I find it works pretty good. I hear people complaining about things that they wish it does, and well, iTunes did that for me. So I play all my podcasts in reverse chronological order. So the oldest ones play first, because then a newer one often will reference something they talked about in the previous one. So I always want to listen to the oldest ones first.
Sure.
Right. Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate your help.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Welcome. And then you can subscribe to our podcast. We have our link on the soundbites.org website.
That's right. And you'll be able to listen to us, our mellifluous tones, anytime you like. All right. While you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, it's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415, I'll read the news. On Tuesday, Apple had their latest fall product announcement. They announced new iPads, iPhones, and a new Apple Watch. The iPads and the iPhones are on sale now. The Watch will ship later this fall. We'll skip all the rah-rah cult stuff and just get to the actual announcements. Apple opened up with their streaming service, Apple TV Plus. Because Apple doesn't release subscriber numbers, we have no idea how many subscribers they have, but they sure are pushing the service.
Well, 35 Emmy nominations.
Yeah. There's a lot of good stuff on it.
Yep.
Next came the iPads. Faster processors, better cameras seem to be the thrust of this announcement. Prices range from $330 on up. The Apple Watch has a 20% bigger screen and a curved display. Not sure how useful that is on a watch, but it's a differentiator. They boast longer.
Your wrist is curved.
Yeah. Well, what they mean is it curves over the side of the display, so it goes all four sides. They do boast longer battery life and about time, new colors, whoopee, and they'll tell you if you fell down during exercise. I don't know why they pushed that, but they said if you fall down during exercise.
Well, they've had fall detection for a while.
Yeah.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
And I understand that. But if you fall during exercise,
you still may hurt yourself.
You might hurt yourself.
You might be young and hurt yourself.
Maybe.
And need to call for help. If you haven't moved, then it says, are you okay? And if you don't answer, it calls your emergency contact.
I just imagine somebody toppling over in a yoga class.
Yeah.
And everybody hearing, you fell down from their watch.
Or the goat landing on top of them.
Right, exactly. they also announced the new iPhone range, mini, regular, and pro. They also have slightly bigger batteries, so Dave would be happy about that, with about an hour and a half longer battery life on the high-end models and about 2.5 hours on the smaller models. The Pro models have three rear-facing cameras, including a zoom lens, a wide lens, and an ultra-wide camera, which can focus on objects as close as 2 centimeters away. For those of you who are metric impaired, that's really close. Prices range from about $700 for the low-end mini on up to significantly over $1,000, especially if you get the version with 1 terabyte of storage. The Pro models include the same A15 Bionic chip as the regular iPhones, but boast a, and I quote, Super Retina XDR display with ProMotion that has twice the refresh rate as previous iPhones. Oh, the 13 also has a smaller notch for the front-facing camera, which for some reason, we've been convinced it's super important. The device now starts with 128 gigs of storage space, which is significantly less than the 1 terabyte you can get. The camera software has a cinematic mode that can hold focus on a moving object, which will be super useful for all those YouTube videos of skateboarders falling downstairs, and something called pull focus, which is actually a term of movies, which lets you decide whether to focus on the foreground or the background, which is different from what's been around on a Android for a while, which is where you can blur the background.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you can blur the foreground.
Bokeh.
What?
Bokeh.
As in a bouquet of flowers?
No. Just pronounced similar. Is it B-O-Q-U-E?
Yeah, I think so. And that lets you change focus from the foreground or the background. So, have you ordered your new Apple stuff yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. How much is the 1 terabyte phone? It's got to be easily $1,500, if not more.
Let's try. I haven't tried that, maxing it out. We always like to max everything out. You can start with a brand new iPhone at $399.
I said that, yes.
Yeah. And so we always like to say that. Starting at $399.
That's a mini.
The SE with only 64, which isn't bad. That's one of the big things this year is the minimum storage has been doubled from last year. My 32 gig iPad is really, really small now.
Yeah. Remember when you got it? You thought, I got 32 gig.
New colors now also.
Right. I forgot to mention the colors. There's red and I'm sure they don't call it red.
No, there's no product red yet. That usually comes in a month or two.
Right.
And they're different between the regulars and the maxes. and the pro. The regular and the pro have different colors. There's a new Sierra blue. So it looks like with 1 terabyte is $1,599.
Oh, it's close. $1,600.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there might be carrier deals.
Well, most people don't care about the price anymore because they just pay it every month and don't realize they're doubling the price when they pay it.
It's $60 a month.
Right.
Which isn't that much. If you need a terabyte of storage, you probably have an expense account to charge it back to.
Right. And then a lot of people will get it simply because it's the prestige.
Yeah, you got to have the latest one.
Right.
And they change the colors every year. So this year's blue is a little lighter than last year's midnight blue, which was a little darker. So you know which year you have.
Assuming you pay that much attention to color.
Yeah.
Well, there was the big brouhaha, or perhaps it was a kerfuffle, the one year that Apple brought out a model that was identical in looks to the previous year, and people were very angry.
Yeah.
Very angry. That they didn't get.
How will they know I have the newest device if it looks just like the device from last year? This is an outrage.
It is an outrage. Yeah.
They do have a product red version of the 13 mini and the 13, but they don't have one yet for the Pro or Pro Max.
Ah.
And with the product red, it's the Global Fund to Combat COVID now.
Right. You can pick up a new iPhone in new colors for those of you who must have the absolute latest. And
pre-order started yesterday, so if you haven't pre-ordered it, it's too late.
That's right.
You won't get in. The first batch is coming next Friday. Friday? On the 24th. Is that Friday? No, that's not Friday. Quick, everyone open the calendar.
Yeah,
24th. Yeah, Friday. Next Friday, the first deliveries start arriving. So if you didn't order it within the first few minutes yesterday, you probably won't get one in the first batch.
Right. But you can order it.
You can pre-order now, and you'll get when the next batch is available.
Right. So, there's.
I like the blue. So the smaller phone is a darker blue than the lighter blue on the bigger phone.
Right.
Just to tell the difference between them.
Right. I like the form factor of the smaller phones. My eyes like the screen on the big.
You can magnify the image on the smaller phones, but then you can't see as much of the image.
Right.
You can have it bigger or you can have it more. Take your pick.
Right. Exactly right. So that's, and of course they're using the A15 Bionic chip, which is, is it their newest? Maybe I was wrong.
Well, so the M1 that's in the Mac is basically the A14X.
Okay.
And so they put that in the iPad Pros. So there was some interesting argument and kerfuffle there about the high-end iPad has the same chip as the low-end laptop and now low-end desktop Mac.
Right.
So the performance is pretty much the same. Do you want a tiny touchscreen? You want an intermediate, you know, laptop, or do you want a desktop?
Right.
All running the same chip with very similar specs. So now the A15 is the next generation. So we're expecting a what didn't get announced this week was right. was high end laptops, and so that's probably going to be October. and so is it going to be the M1X? Or what are they going to call the A15 version of the Mac version? Could be the M1X or it could be the M2. Right. We don't know yet. But there's going to be a faster, high-end Mac coming probably in October. But we were expecting it in June at WWDC, and it didn't come. So, oh, how about September when the iPhones come out? No. How about, okay, now October.
yeah. It's the anticipation.
Yeah.
But yeah, now and of course you need to remember, for those of you who are still using Intel Macs, it's hard to get all the same software over if you buy an M something Mac.
Yeah, most of the most popular software has already been rewritten for M1. And for older software that hasn't been, there's a translation layer called Rosetta 2 that will translate most of your old programs. So if your program was running under 1013 or 1014, especially 1015, because that's when they went 64-bit only.
Right.
That was a big jump. It'll probably work on an M1. But check with your program manufacturer to see if they have an M1 version. It may be a pay upgrade.
Right.
We had a customer come in this week that was running Adobe CS3 that's about 15 years old. And he had a problem with his email, and tech support told him to upgrade his OS.
Perfect.
So then Adobe CS3 stopped working because it's not compatible with the new OS.
Of course it did.
Yeah. So always check your programs before you upgrade.
Right.
Because it seems that everyone assumes you have the latest version of everything.
Right.
And you'll probably be fine if you do.
But probably.
If you're running a 2 or 3 year old program, or heaven forbid, a 15 year old program, it's probably definitely not going to work on a new computer or new OS.
And what's your name again? Steve. As Steve said, it is unlikely to be a free upgrade, particularly when you go from a 15 year old program to the newest version. So check to see whether or not A, your old programs work, and B, upgrading costs money.
And the choice becomes you can pay a lot of money to try to downgrade your OS, or you can learn how to use a different program.
Right.
Guess what's when they chose?
Yep.
I want to downgrade my OS to use the program I know.
Yep. No, I get it. But we've had a lot of people. I've talked to a lot of people recently about the GIMP.
Yeah.
The GNU image manipulation program, which is essentially things like Photoshop and Adobe Illustrator.
Does it do vector too?
Yeah.
Because I've been looking for a vector graphic.
Inkscape.
Is it?
Inkscape.
Now that should be bitmap because it's ink. It should be Linescape for vector.
Yes, it should. Yes, it should. But it's Inkscape, and that'll do vector stuff.
Illustrator.
What?
Like Illustrator.
Like Illustrator. And so you can find alternatives. In fact, if you go to alternative2.net, alternativeto.net, you can type in a name like Illustrator and see all the alternatives that are available for it.
And a lot of them are free.
A lot of them are free.
So that's the biggest complaint with the Adobe software is it was $2,500 to upgrade from suite to suite to suite. So most people skipped every 2 or 3 years. So there's CS3, CS4, CS5, CS6, and then they went to Creative Cloud, $50 a month.
Right.
And that's a lot of money for an average person that doesn't have a company behind them.
Right.
Or if you're a freelance designer and have clients you can bill, that $50 a month is rough. If you just want Photoshop, they have a $10 a month plan.
Right.
Which isn't bad for just Photoshop. But
it's still $120 a year.
And if you can learn a new program,
you can get it for
you
free.
You can get all that similar stuff for free, yeah. Which you have to do with commercial programs anyway. You went from Word 2003 to 2007 to 2011 to 2016. There's enough differences in there that it was different.
When the ribbon came out, the thing across the top, people went nuts because it looked different.
Yep. How do I turn that off? Yeah, you don't.
You don't. You use LibreOffice. Yeah. It doesn't have one.
Yep. I found a, do we have a someone on the phone? No, but it's time for a commercial.
Time for a commercial.
Sponsor breaks.
No, that's not commercials.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we're going to take a break.
Yep.
We'll be back in just a few minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco.
I thought you were Dave Enright.
I'm Dave Enright. and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and we are truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Vote in the poll at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. And we'll be back with a whole lot more Soundbites. Take a quick bio break. And we'll see you over there on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966 Jazz. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Thanks, Harry. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And as Harry said, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Microsoft has been working to make passwordless sign-on for Windows and Microsoft accounts a reality for years now. And now those efforts have come to fruition. Users can now completely remove their passwords from their Microsoft's accounts and opt to rely on Microsoft Authenticator or some other form of verification to sign in on new devices. Microsoft added passwordless logon support for work and school accounts back in March, but this is the first time the feature has been offered for regular old individual Microsoft accounts. Passwordless accounts improve security by taking passwords out of the equation entirely, making it impossible to get any kind of access to your full account information without access to whatever you use to verify your identity for two-factor authentication. Even if you protect your Microsoft account with two-factor authentication, an attacker who knows your Microsoft account password could still try that password on other sites to see if you've reused it anywhere, which, of course, you know you should never do. And some forms of two-factor authentication, particularly SMS-based 2FA, have security problems of their own. Microsoft has offered passwordless authentication for Windows 10 and Microsoft accounts for a while now. And if you're already taking advantage of those features, nothing about how you sign into your devices has changed. You just need to visit the Microsoft account site, go to the security tab, select advanced security options, and turn on passwordless account feature to remove your password entirely. If you want to go fully passwordless, the easiest and most secure way for most people is to use the Microsoft Authenticator app on your phone. If you already have it installed, all you need to do is confirm the removal of your account's password, is open the app and approve the change. Other applicator apps like Authy or Google Authenticator will not work, shockingly, with the QR code format that Microsoft uses to enable passwordless accounts, of course. You must use Microsoft's app. You could also use a physical security token like YubiKey or a PC with Windows Hello support to log in. You should also be aware that if you do this, you may lose access to some apps, services, and devices, particularly older ones that don't support this system of logging in. So are you passwordless yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Ed from same, is this the same Ed from Ithaca, New York?
It's the same Ed with the same Mac, but a different question.
Okay.
That's a MacBook Air.
Is there an app that you can recommend that will allow me to record podcasts that are coming in or Zoom meetings or anything like that?
Yep, and there's one built into the Mac. It's the QuickTime player, which plays movies, can also do screen recordings and audio recordings. Okay. It isn't as featured as a full recording program, but it is built in to play with. I use a program called Audacity for recording and editing audio. The trick is, if you're not going to be home, to hit record to have a program to schedule a recording.
No, I don't need that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so Audacity is a big one. Commercially, Apple's Logic is sort of the granddaddy of the...
I know Amadeus runs on Apple.
Amadeus, yeah. I used to use Amadeus, but then switched over to Audacity.
Yeah, we use Amadeus here at the station for editing.
Yeah.
Okay. Will these record even if I have the volume on my computer speakers down to zero or to muted?
You have to add a separate program then to send the audio from one app to a different app, because otherwise it does use the microphone to capture the speakers. There's a commercial program called Audio Hijack that will basically hijack the audio from one a source and let you and record it in a different source. So, for example, I will use have iTunes playing a podcast while I have Audacity recording the podcast. When I'm not here, I do that. Audio Hijack is a commercial program that does that. There's another one called Soundflower, SNDFLOWER, that will... No, they renamed it again. I just looked on my list. Soundflower, both words.
What is it now?
Soundflower. Yeah. And that's a free program to hijack audio and send it to a different source. So I go into iTunes and set the output, instead of the output going to the speaker, I set the output to Soundflower, and then go into Audacity. Instead of recording from the microphone, I record from Soundflower.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
And then you don't even hear it at all on your computer, and it doesn't matter what your volume is. If you also want to hear it while you're recording it, then you use a built-in program called the Audio MIDI utility that will allow you to mix your inputs and outputs together. So you can mix the speaker and Soundflower together so that it goes into Soundflower and goes out to the speaker so you can hear what you're recording.
Okay. And so I'll find that in QuickTime in the apps on the Finder?
Applications folder or utilities. QuickTime is in applications, and the Audio MIDI utility is in utilities.
Where do I find utilities?
In applications.
Oh, I see. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Ed.
Bye.
Yeah, there's a very subtle difference between an application and a utility. But I think they do that so you don't have 200 items in one folder.
Right.
So an application you don't use very often is a utility.
Right. For Windows people, Total Recorder, TotalRecorder.com, does all that stuff as well. It used to be $15. I don't know what it is this week.
Does scheduled recordings too.
Right. And on Linux, there's 100 programs that you can set in crontab. You could probably do that in the Mac
yeah,
as
but
well.
I think Audacity does record scheduled recording too, because I used to do that to schedule it from my home computer. Now I use so I record the show live on my computer, and then Nick records it on his home computer, so we have two copies in case something goes wrong.
Yes, there is a timer record option in Audacity.
Yep.
Transport recording time record.
So record and edit. And nice. Record at a time. And Audacity is a free and open source program as well, running on pretty much every platform.
Right. And then you can enable an automatic save. You can even enable an automatic export.
Yeah, so when it finishes recording, it's basically an AIF uncompressed audio file.
Right.
And so then you can have it do an export as an MP3.
Right. So pretty nice, actually. And then you can have it do something else after the recording completes. So if you've written a batch file or whatever you call it on a Mac, you you wrote your own Python program to do something, you could send it to, you have that program do something, or mail it to somebody or, you know, whatever you wanted to do, or I suppose delete it.
Or send you an email that it finished. So then you go into the other room and.
Right. So, there's all kinds of things you can do, and Audacity is available for every operating system, Macs and Linux and Windows. So, and it's a free program, by the way.
I think there's two of them. I think there's like a free program and then there's a paid program. There's two versions of it.
Oh, maybe.
I want to say.
Maybe. If that's true, I wonder, I don't know if...
I don't see a price list on their website, audacityteam.org is their main... I do remember a different project manager took over recently, but it still looks like it's free and open source.
Yeah, it doesn't have pricing. Interesting. So you can download it for Windows, Mac, Linux. You can download the source. For those of you still using Amiga OS, you can download the source and compile it yourself. There are a bunch of plugins in addition to everything else. So you can add various plugins to do various things. This is an amazing piece of software.
I got to see if it's M1 native. So when I... when I get my new computer, I got to make sure my OBS broadcaster works, my Audacity editor works.
Right. Well, I use Audacity to, as some of you may know, that I have a computer minute that happens on Thursdays and Saturdays, and I record it right through Audacity. It's actually pretty nifty. I can record it. I can do audio compression. I can do time management. I can cut out, I can do noise reduction. You can do pretty much everything that you need to do with it. You can add reverb if you want to. I should do that sometime. Add some reverb.
Reverb.
Just for the heck of it.
There's probably a button over there on that board that will do it, too.
Probably there is.
There's a zillion buttons over there.
Do not touch that button, Michael. Audacity lets you do amazing things. You can also multi-track, and you can merge two recordings and then even them out. I forget what they call that, some technical term, so that they sound like one recording. So, and like I said, it's absolutely free, and it's available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. Excuse me, GNU Linux.
From GNOME Linux.
From GNOME, right? and for other operating systems, like I said, you can download the source and compile it yourself. It's a very cool thing, and it is absolutely free at audacityteam.org. Very cool piece of software. And they update it fairly regularly, so that's pretty neat. And there's documentation, so if you need to learn how to read it, to use it.
And they have some really good forums, too.
Yeah, they really do. It supports 16, 24, and 32-bit recording. We don't need much because we're just voice.
Yeah.
But if you're doing music, you definitely want the higher things. And you've got all kinds of, like I said, plugins and special effects and... all kinds of editing options and all of that stuff. And you can record it through a microphone or a mixer, digitize recordings from other media, all the stuff you would expect one of the very high-end, very expensive programs to do. You can pretty much do all of that at Audacity.
Yeah, multiple tracks. I haven't run into a track limit, but... I only do like 8 or 10 tracks.
I suppose it depends on how much RAM you have.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. You'd be amazed at the number of very high-end quality programs are available for free. Like we said, the GIMP and LibreOffice and everything. So you should really take a quick look and see how you feel about it. It's a pretty amazing program.
A lot of times it's written by someone who wanted that thing, and so he wrote it. And then released it for everyone else to play with, too.
Right. As we say in the Linux community, somebody had an itch and scratched it.
Yep.
And then made that available to everybody else with the same itch.
Yeah.
And, you know, some programs are very simple. Programs I write are ludicrously simple. But the programs that many of these people write are professional quality, as is Audacity.
Yep.
You'd be amazed at what you can do. And editing is ridiculously easy with Audacity.
Yeah.
I'm kind of astounded at how easy it is to edit. So, the only thing is, of course, you've got to have your computer on when you do one of those. I had a friend who was complaining that he had a different program, but he was complaining that it didn't record. And I said, well, have you looked at the log? What was it doing at that time? He said, there's no log. Why is there no log? He said, well, computer was shut down. Oh, okay, that might be why.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the reason.
Yeah, there might be a problem there.
It didn't know to turn itself on and do the recording?
Exactly.
This is not a DVR. It doesn't turn itself on and off because there's some internal clock in there that makes it,
That's exactly right. You can't really blame the guy. He's used to DVRs. You set them, you turn them off, and they turn themselves on.
Who turns the computer off, though?
People still apparently do. I don't know who they are, but they do. But yeah, I do an auto record using MPlayer in my case and Crontab to record our show every week, and then again using Crontab, I send it to a place where Steve can download it if he needs it, and deletes the old one, so I'm not using too much storage and yada yada yada. And Steve then does yeoman's work editing the system down and putting it up for the podcast. He usually has it done by Sunday. And somebody called me and complained that it wasn't up by Saturday afternoon. Send me a message like at 3:00.
I didn't get home yet.
Yeah,
I don't get home till like 3:00.
Right. Sent me a message like 3:00. I said, well, clearly, since Steve never gets it up until Sunday, he's clearly lax. Why don't you take it over? Yeah. At which point I never heard from him again.
And it depends on the weather.
Right.
I might be flying.
You might be flying. In which case, it doesn't get done until Monday.
Yeah. It's going to be a little windy today, but it's not supposed to be raining.
There you go. So, we are all volunteer here.
So I've had my planes in the car all week waiting for a nice night. But now it's getting dark too early, so it's not something you can do after work much.
Night flights, you put lights in them.
Yeah, but you still have to see the ground coming up at you when you're
landing. Don't have floodlights for the field?
You got to bring the car up and point it at the runway.
You guys need an upgrade to your field.
We did have a really nice night flying fireworks show at the Heli Show last month. And the airplanes and helicopters flying in the middle of the fireworks.
Nice. Anybody get hit?
I don't think so.
Dang it.
Only one plane ended in a tree.
Oh.
So when the light stopped moving, it was in a tree. Well, there's the trees. So now you know how far away the tree was.
Right. Really, it was a public service when you get right down to it. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's video on our club website and on YouTube, the Mars Club. I'm sorry, Rams Club. So the airplane club is Rams, the Rochester Aero Modeling Society.
Right.
And the rocket club is Mars, the Monroe Astronomical Rocket Society.
Sure. Because rockets go to Mars.
Yep.
And planes ram into trees.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder if that's what they were thinking back then. Yeah. Yeah, both clubs started like 50 years ago. So.
Yeah. I haven't done model rocketry in many years.
This weekend, there's a launch at Geneseo, the Geneseo Airport, I probably won't be going because I'm here.
Right.
I think there's one more launch in October. Then it gets a little too cold. Although, both clubs do New Year's Day launches, so they have the freeze-in. They both freeze-in to launch rockets or freeze-in to fly airplanes.
Nice.
So a lot of guys will put skis or floats on their planes. Although in the past few years, there hasn't been a whole lot of snow, so we could shovel the runway.
Right.
But mostly you go into the clubhouse.
You don't have a little RC plow?
Someone probably does.
Probably does.
But you guys have rock crawler. We did put a rock crawler track.
There you go.
Off on the side. But it's mostly an excuse to go into the clubhouse, sit around the fireplace, and talk.
Right. A friend of mine got very angry because he lives out in the country and everything is gravel, everything. And he couldn't run his model cars because there was just no flat, clean surface. So he went into model tanks.
Ooh, yeah.
And now he likes the fact that it's rough terrain all around his place. But yeah, so a program, like I said, if you head on over to alternative2.net, that's alternativeto.net, you can type in the name of pretty much any program, and you'll see well over 100,000 applications. And you'll not only see the program itself, but opinions on those programs. And believe me when I tell you, these people don't pull punches.
Yeah.
So you can just, you know, name a program and see many alternatives to it. So you do not have to lock yourself into certain, shall we say, for-pay programs in order to get what you... We've been talking about LibreOffice forever. Mm-hmm. Originally it was OpenOffice, now it's LibreOffice. Or Apache Office, if you want that version. Or StarOffice, what it used to be.
You just have to realize that you can learn a new program.
Right.
It's 90% the same.
Right.
It's not a whole lot of different ways to have a word processor. You get a white page and you type on it.
Yep, exactly right. And of course, there are innovations, great innovations, like on Google Docs, you can dictate now to it. But generally speaking, they're all the same. Whatever you use, Steve is right. It's a blank piece of paper and you type on it. And that's true of the word processor and the spreadsheet and the presentation package and the database and dang near everything there is. So don't be afraid to try a new program, particularly the free versions. They're free.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit of your time and you learn a whole new thing. And maybe you find that you don't need to pay for the upgrade next time for the program you've been using, because the free program does everything you want it to do. So I would be very, I would encourage you strongly to check out some of the free programs that are available to do the things you want. Yes, you'll have to learn something new, but I have faith in you. I don't think you're stupid. I think you can learn a new program if you put your mind to it. So give it a shot and let us know. Give us a call and let us know what programs you use that are free that you really like. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. That's the sort of stuff that we're interested in hearing about from you. We're going to take a quick break while you make that call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, with Michael Oden, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That particular show would be Sound Bites, right here in the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Josh from Fairport, New York on the line. Hi, Josh. What's up?
Hey, guys. Just had a question because my wife has this Gmail account she's had for a really long time. And for basically as long as she's had it, she's getting emails from, you know, another person who I guess somewhere along the line created a very similar email address.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's getting emails, whether it's like this person, you know, personal affairs or, you know, coupons and stuff like that. And
right.
We're wondering if there's any way to kind of alleviate that. It's just been kind of a passive nuisance for years, but we're wondering, you know, if we could fix it somehow.
Well, reply back saying this is not the person you intended to send this to.
Right.
Right.
That's, you can do two things. One is that, and if they still won't stop, then you just put them in their, just blacklist them. Blacklist mm-hmm. the account it's coming from.
Okay.
And then that'll just head to your spam folder. You'll never see it again.
Okay.
I have had that issue. I said this recently. I began getting some very private pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And emails from someone that I don't know. I hasten to say that. I simply do not know who that person is. And I wrote back to them and said, this is not the Nick you think it is. and they did not stop. So I did the same thing. I blacklisted them. I put them in my, I said, this is everything that comes from this person is spam. And then it all goes to my spam folder and it's gone the next day.
Yeah. There's a block list in the Gmail settings.
Right.
I've just posted a link on how to find that.
Okay, great.
One of the things that's similar is if you get, junk mail,
mm-hmm.
if it's from a legitimate company, then you're usually safe in unsubscribing from that junk mail list. If it's crap, fake junk mail, never unsubscribe.
Right.
Because that tells the other end you read messages, and so they add you to more lists.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, but legitimate companies sending, commercial email will remove you from the list. The trick is you might be on their list three or four times because we get that question a lot. You know, I got this same ad from Company X six times. Well, you're on their email list six times. They need to clean their email list out to remove duplicates.
Yes, they do.
Right.
Remember when you used to get six full color print catalogs from the same vendor?
Yeah. Well, those we loved.
Yeah.
I have a friend who bought a pellet maker from he's got a pellet stove,
mm-hmm.
and it makes pellets from catalogs.
So
he subscribed to every catalog he could find. Now he gets free fuel.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but that's the way to do it. You can blacklist them. You can block them. You can just. But if it's a legitimate person. The best thing to do is to let, because that means that the person they're trying to send this information to is not getting it.
Yeah, so that other person is pissed that their friend is never answering them.
That's exactly right.
Exactly. Well, hey, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. Good luck.
Thanks.
Yeah, especially the more simple your email address is, the more likely they'll think that it may not be the person they think it is. But then some people end up with such complicated email addresses that, you know, one typo, it was 769. No, it's supposed to be 768 x.com.
Right. And that's a problem. Before we get back to the phones, let me remind everybody that tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, we will have the Sound Bites Lounge. It's very easy to get to. You can just go to soundbites.org/lounge, or you can just go to soundbites.org and look at the second post on the main page, and it has a link to soundbites.org/lounge. We're online from 9 to 10 p.m., courtesy of the lovely folks at Mastermind Lounge, and we will be there to answer anybody's computer questions. Just join us and ask your questions. Stick around or leave or do whatever you want to do. We're there just to make you a little happier than you are right now. So join us tomorrow at 9 o'clock. In the meantime, we'll head back to the phones and we'll talk to Rick from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Rick. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We're talking about using non-mainstream programs like LibreOffice. And I use LibreOffice. I love it. I also use the Microsoft and Excel and that. But I put LibreOffice on a couple of Windows machines, but also on my Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem that I'm having on the Chromebook, which is where I'd really like to be using it, is that it will not read my USB drive. And I need to keep a certain program on that. I've looked around. I've seen there's various, I guess, ways of doing it, such as putting on a full Linux shell onto the Chromebook. But that's beyond what I think I want to do, kind of wipes out everything. And I also, when I read about that, it wasn't 100% successful. So I was just wondering, do you know anything about how I could get LibreOffice to recognize my USB drive?
That should be Chrome. The OS's responsibility to mount the drive, nothing to do with LibreOffice.
Yeah, it does. And I can read it in Chrome. I can move the files over. And what I have to do is I have to move the file into the Chromebook.
Right.
And LibreOffice can read it from there. But I can't say that LibreOffice cannot see the USB drive. It's not.
Once you've got the USB drive inserted,
yep.
Open the Files app.
Yep.
Right-click, and on the left, you'll see a list of recent and audio in your files. And down near the bottom, you'll see that USB drive.
Nope.
In the Files app.
Not in LibreOffice.
No, I understand. Yes, you're right. It is in there.
Thank you. Right click on it and select Share with Linux.
I've done that.
And it still doesn't show up?
No, it still LibreOffice won't pick it up.
What file system is the drive formatted as?
No. I mean, it's the whatever the easiest way to turn it on in Chrome was, I went in and turned on the beta version of Linux.
No, the file system on the flash drive. Is it FAT32? Is it XFAT? Is it NTFS?
I believe it's FAT32. I mean, I'm using it on Windows machines 99% of the time.
Yeah, FAT32 is kind of the most generic.
Well, but you can read it from the Files app, correct?
I can read it from the Files app, but that's what I have to do in order I have to read it from that file, and I have to save it to that file. And in order to get it to the USB drive, I have to copy it, which is messy. I'm trying to just read it directly from the USB, which is what I can do on the Windows machines.
Right. I solved that issue for myself by saying Share with Linux.
Uncheck it, reboot, and check it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is, does it not read it at all, or does it read it but can't save it because it's read-only?
It doesn't seem to recognize it anywhere. Like when I go in, it says like my files and all that, and it just doesn't seem to understand that there's something else there. But when I'm in LibreOffice, that's where it can't find it.
Can you switch to other folders on the Chrome OS?
I've gone to all the folders I can find when I'm in LibreOffice. This is the problem. When I'm just on the Chromebook, I can find the files. But it's when I'm in LibreOffice.
Right, but in LibreOffice, when you try to open a file, can you open files in other folders on the Chrome OS?
Yes.
Okay, well, I found a link which may solve your problem. Steve's going to post it in a couple of minutes.
That was the next link I found on my list.
Oh, there you go.
We have very similar Google Foo.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. But it's the title of the article is How to Grant LibreOffice File Open Permission on Chrome OS. So we'll post something about those things and see what the
see if that
helps.
I've seen a number of them, and I kind of like read the comments and said, "Oops, well, this didn't work," and that type of thing. And as I say, I'm hesitant to wipe out, power wash my entire system. And
no, of course. And that probably won't change anything.
Right. But, I'll try the link and redo everything. Because if you could get LibreOffice on a Chromebook, that'd be great.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Yeah.
Yes, you can add it. You just have to be able to read from the
give
USB
it permission
port.
To read an external mounted drive.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly, yeah. That'd be a great thing. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Yeah, that's not something I've tried personally yet because I don't have. I use Google Docs, but
it certainly certainly would be pretty useful thing to be able to do, frankly.
All right, our next caller is Ken from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ken, what's up?
Hi, fellas. I'm sorry I missed Mr. Enright. Just wanted to wish you a happy birthday, all three.
Thank you so much. Thank you. All four of us. It's the three of us and the show itself, all in September. Michael, when is your birthday?
Yeah, I got to add Mike to my list.
June.
We missed you, and I apologize.
Well, if it means anything, I'm a September guy, too. So
there you go.
32 years, 1 month, and 15 days. That's what my math tells me.
There you go.
And I'm hoping for, I know this may rock your socks off, but I'm looking for 40 years, 1 month, and 5 days, which would be September 8th, 2029.
There you go.
We'll all be there.
We'll all be there.
We'll all be there and do the best we can.
That's exactly it.
My question is somewhat loaded. With all these issues with software that can allow people to remote a machine, I'm just wondering, is there in Windows and, say, in Chrome and even in Linux, for that matter, is there a way to circumvent, regardless of the software that's being utilized, to remote the machine?
You mean to if you're talking about people who can remotely take over your machine without your permission, then that's antivirus software and anti-malware software.
Yeah, the bad guys are using a bug in the remote software to bypass the permission you have to give to give someone access to your computer.
Right. And generally speaking, making sure your machine is updated and all of that stuff is the way to do that, because they keep closing those holes, the holes that are found as soon as they can be found. It's like our first news item today was that every single operating system and pretty much every program Adobe ever made had an update this month. This week, as a matter of fact, because of remote code execution.
And Microsoft in particular has had a horrible problem with remote desktop, which is built into every Windows PC. Apparently the bad guys have been accumulating lists of bugs. And every time Microsoft patches one, you know, next month there's more critical Microsoft RDP updates. And so the problem is remote access to your computer is something that's built into your computer, but you're supposed to have to give permission first. And so the bugs allow someone in without permission. Or, you know, some of the more tricky malware claims you have a problem and claims to be tech support and will claim to fix it if you let them in.
Interesting. I was hoping there would be services, say, in Microsoft you could disable that would shut them all down, but it sounds that's not possible.
No, the problem is there are so many entrances into the operating system that you really do need to keep all the software up to date.
Wow. Okay,
one of the things you can do to help mitigate that is to not run as the administrator.
Yeah.
Then if they get into your account, the amount of damage they can actually do is minimized.
Because they can't install new software.
Right.
One of the ways that a lot of the bad guys get in is through malicious ads on a website. And that ad will download and install a program. And because you're the administrator, it can install that program and then give the bad guy access. If you're not an administrator, a box will pop up asking for administrator access.
And you simply say
no. You say no, you're not installing a program now. I didn't know I was installing a program now. Don't give it your password.
Right.
Okay. Well, I know you probably have other callers, but it's always wonderful to hear you guys on the radio, and I'm looking forward to each and every week until the 40th year, and then we can all celebrate.
There you go. You got it. Thanks, Ken.
You guys have a splendid day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, you need to be aware that, look, back in the day, computers were wide open.
Yeah.
The idea was to share. Macs originally came out, they broadcast all their information to everybody.
The first Windows file sharing automatically shared your C drive.
That's exactly
remember,
right.
When RoadRunner first came out and everyone connected to high-speed internet, everybody's C drive was available to everybody else using RoadRunner.
That's exactly right. And then at some point, and I know this comes as a shock to you, at some point they began to realize
this probably wasn't a good idea.
Yeah.
And so they
hey, guys, you know, it turns out these bad guys are really, you know, this probably wasn't a good idea.
Exactly. They're, I got people in my machine that I don't know who they are. How do we stop that? Yeah. So now we're in the process of closing all those holes. The problem is that every operating system is very, very complex. And even the slightest mistake can open up a hole. And the bad guys are diligently looking for holes and finding them. And so, as Steve said, they've got lists of them. When the good guys close one hole, the bad guys just move to the next one on the list. You know, and particularly when you've got state actors, states who pay people to find holes, they can have 25, 35, 50 people all looking for holes. So that when, you know, Microsoft or Apple closes one, boom, they just move on to the next one.
Yep.
And that's why there are so many updates so regularly. Like I said, this month, everybody updated. Windows, Linux, Mac, everybody updated kind of everything. Adobe updated pretty much every program they're still selling. Obviously, only the ones that they're still selling.
Yep. So. And that's part of the problem. If you're running an older program, an older operating system, you're not going to get the patch, but you're still vulnerable to that problem.
There are systems out there that still have Flash on them. Flash yep. hasn't been updated in a year or more.
Yep.
So if you're running Flash, you are vulnerable. You are. So you might want to uninstall it, and you can look through your list of programs. If you see Flash, remove it.
And the Flash updater for the last year or so has been offering to uninstall Flash.
Right.
You should.
You really, really should. And if you get a program that says we want to update Flash, it's a lie. It's a fake yep. program, and do not fall for that.
Because Adobe updated Flash so often because it was so buggy, the bad guys found it easy to make fake updates to trick people into installing their malicious program because they were used to installing a Flash update.
Weekly.
Oh, no, not again.
Right, right. So, yeah, you want to be aware that stuff is out there, and it's going to happen. All right, let me read one more news item. Apple is facing a new class action lawsuit that accuses it of false or deceptive marketing for the M1-powered MacBook Pro and MacBook Air, fraudulent business practices, misconduct in customer support, and violation of consumer law. The lawsuit filed this week in the Northern District of California represents Apple customers across the United States who have faced hardware defects in their M1 MacBook Pro and MacBook Air. Over the last several months, a significant number of customers have reported that the displays on their new Apple Silicon MacBooks have suddenly cracked or displayed black horizontal and vertical lines, making them unusable. As the lawsuit alleges, those customers said that the cracks and malfunctions were caused by a hardware defect rather than by the users themselves. While addressing those complaints, the lawsuit attempts to cast a larger shadow over Apple's deceptive marketing and fraudulent business practices. The lawsuit accuses Apple of falsely advertising the 13-inch displays in the MacBook Pro and MacBook Air as premium in quality, reliability, and durability, despite Apple's allegedly knowing the opposite. According to the case, Apple engaged in fraudulent business practices since its rigorous testing of the displays before their release should have made the alleged defect apparent. Despite that, the company continued to release the product. While fraudulently and falsely marketing the displays as premium, reliable, and durable, the lawsuit further accuses Apple of severe violation of consumer law according to legislation in the state of California. Specifically, the lawsuit accuses Apple of violating customer law by refusing to repair their displays for customers even when they were under warranty. In some cases, leaving debris between the MacBook and its lid may cause damage. However, the lawsuit states no customer has done so and that the widespread nature of the defect further proves it's a manufacturing defect rather than anything else. The lawsuit highlights a valid point. For customers, regardless of whether repairs were paid for out of pocket or not, the replaced display unit would also, in theory, be defective. As a result, the suit accuses Apple of further business misconduct by placing users in a never-ending loop of faulty displays, leading to costly repairs, then equally defective replacements. In its current form, the suit is not requesting damages or monetary compensation from Apple. Instead, it's asking that Apple reverse its false marketing of the quality and reliability of its MacBook displays, as outlined above, and that it correct repair
replace, or otherwise rectify its unlawful, unfair, false, or deceptive practices. The suit provides Apple 30 days as of August 30th to address the customers and the alleged screen defect. Once the 30 days has elapsed with no action from Apple, the suit representing Apple customers and others involved will move forward to seek damages from the company. So how's your new MacBook Air Pro holding up? Give us a call, 585-9662. Well, probably not at this point. It's just a couple minutes till we're done. Yeah. But
it's hard to imagine a physical crack in the glass not being you hit it or you close the lid too hard or something landed on it.
When, you know, 10,000 people have this issue, that's a problem that is probably not every one of, I mean, I get it. If you throw a handful of gravel into your laptop and then close the lid, you're going to break something. But if you just close the lid, I mean, I can slam this lid pretty hard. Nothing breaks. If it is breaking on the M1, that's a problem.
We've had a lot of people that get their power cord stuck in the hinge and then they close the lid and it breaks the glass.
Right, right. But if it happens, does it happen that often? That's the question.
Every time you leave your power cord stuck in the hinge and close the lid, it will break the glass.
Yes. 50% of the time it happens 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So, but yes, and I understand that, but that's what the lawsuit is about.
Yeah.
You know, they will discover the extent of the issue and hopefully do some more testing about that. Look, any computer or phone or tablet can have a problem.
When I see people pick up their laptop by the screen, my God, you're contorting the glass.
Right.
Glass doesn't like to bend either.
Right, exactly right. And so I get that. I do get that. But if there are enough of them, it gets more suspicious
that it's not
that kind of an issue. Don't pick your laptop up by the screen. Pick it up by the base.
Two hands.
That's what they're portable, not tossable.
Yeah.
You want to be very careful about that. And
you pick it up with one hand, you're going to squeeze the other hand and compress the components, and you're going to contort the logic board that's screwed down inside that case.
Right. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Steve Ray. I really want to thank Michael Oden, who just jumps in and does what needs to be done. God bless you, Michael. You're okay in my book. I don't care what Rob says about you. And that's it for us for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Please call earlier and more often next week. Speaking of next week, we will be here. And the easiest way to get to us is to either join us online. Steve is putting us on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook and everywhere else. And we're on a podcast, and we're on our this Jazz 90.1 app, and we're streaming, and we're live on the air, and all kinds of stuff. Anyway, we're done for another week. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?